All right, Shabbos, say good morning. Let's begin. We have a lot to do today. Top of Kuf Yud Ches, we left off. In the middle of the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara says, remember, Rabbi Yehuda's position is that halacha lamaisa, even on the Bama Gedola, ultimately we only offer up chovos. We only offer up obligatory offerings. This is the sheet that we began to discuss yesterday. So the Gemara says, Elohak Siv, third line down from the top, Elohak Siv Ish. So we'll say, but one second, but yet both by Moshe Rabbeinu, as well as by the Pasuk and Shoftim, the Navi uses the Lashon Ish, which sounds like, again, Rabbo say, that means what? That, look at Rashi for this moment. Rabbi Huda Hak Siv Ish, V'ilav L'mi'uti Ach M'b'am G'dola Asa, the Pashtos, is this not talking about the idea? It doesn't Ish come to teach me about a Bama Kitana, what we call an individual altar, and to teach me that obligatory offerings may not be offered up on a Bama Kitana? To which the Gemara says, Elohak Siv Ish, Lav Lameima, the Ish Yashra Sudalikruv, Hachavos Lolikruv. But say, doesn't the word Ish come to teach me that an individual has the ability to offer up non-obligatory karbanos, but chovos he does not offer up? To which the Gemara says, "Kik siv ish lahachshir es hazar." So we'll say Rabbi Yehuda has a very interesting shita. He holds that the word ish comes to go ahead and be machshir azar, to teach you that a non-kohen has the ability to offer up on a bama. So the Gemara says, "Zar mi vizorak hakohen es adam amizbach Hashem nafka." Well, say, I learned out the fact that a zar has the ability to offer up on a bama from another pasuk. The pasuk says the kohen will go out and throw the blood on the mizbach Hashem. When is there a din of a kohen? We'll say, when do you need a kohen for the avodah? Dafka, when it's mizbach Hashem. But if it's not mizbach Hashem, if it's a bama, then ultimately, again, I don't need a kohen. To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you, ma'u detemo libay kiddush b'choros kimei kara. So I'll say, I might have thought as follows. I might have thought, you're right. You only need a kohen, ultimately, again, in the real Mizbeach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, before the Ribon, meaning I only need a kohen in the Mizbeach that exists before God, which refers either to the Mizbeach of the Mishkan, wherever the Mishkan may be, or the Mizbeach of the Beis HaMikdash. But I might have thought that on a bama, I should require what? It's actually very interesting. I should require b'choros, a firstborn, that not anyone could do avoda on a Mizbeach, but ultimately, again, I need a b'chor. Why? Because at least the avoda on a bama should resemble the avoda that once was. And just like in the beginning before, the b'choros were swapped out, so they did the avoda, so too I would have thought that that would be the din here as well. Kamash malon, no. Kamash malon, say that that is not the case, that a court, therefore, Ish comes to teach me, that any individual has the ability to do the avoda on a bama. I chachamim hainu tanakama, to which the Gemara says, but based on what you just said, aren't the chachamim saying the same thing as the tanakama? Rav Papa says, no, here's the nafkamina, kervu nisachim bamidbar ika benai. Rabbi says, the fundamental machlokus between them is, were nisachim wine libations offered up on the Mizbeach and the Mishkan in the Midbar. Take a look at Rashi, we'll say for just a moment. Rashi says, Karvu Nisacha B'Midbar Ika B'Nahu, L'Rabbanon Kamai Lo Karvu Nisacha B'Midbar. We'll say, according to the Rabbanon, ultimately again, they did not offer up Nisachim in the Midbar, but yet ultimately, again, according to the Tanakama, they did. Fine. Amar Mar, Rabbi Shimon. So we'll say, remember again, the next Shita we dealt with was the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says, it was a very interesting Shita. He says that on the Bama Gedola, they only offered up Psachim and Chovos Shakavua Lahen Zman. So we'll say a very interesting shita. So remember again, all we're doing now is we're going through the brayse that listed all the different shitos. So again, Rabbi Shimon telling me that in the desert, so we'll say this is the first time we see a qualification on the Bama Gedola. See, up until now, again, everyone was talking about the qualifications as they apply to the Bama Kitana. But Bama Gedola, which also refers again to the centralized altar wherever the Mishkan is. So the Bama Gedola, we always assume, kind of always resembled the Mishkan in the desert. Anything that was Sibor was offered up. Rabbi Shimon comes along and says, no, only karbanos like Psachim were offered up, namely, only communal obligatory offerings which have a set time were offered up on the Bama. So he wants my time to Rabbi Shimon. So what's Rabbi Shimon's logic? Where does he get this from? D'chsiv, v'yasu b'nei Yisrael asa pasach b'gilgal. So we'll say, this is a very fascinating sugya. So Klal Yisrael did the Pesach in Gilgal. So remember again, we'll say Gilgal, cross over the Yarden, come into Eretz Yisrael. First stop is Gilgal. Right? First stop, conquer Yericho, and then Gilgal. So the Gemara says, they offered up the Pesach in Gilgal. Offered up the Pesach in Gilgal. So says the Gemara, Pshita. We'll say now, that's obvious. In other words, the Gemara says, I don't understand, why does the Torah have to tell me that they offered up the Karban Pesach in Gilgal? In other words, why would we assume otherwise? So we'll say, see, this is amazing. Ella, Pshita. So the Gemara says, obviously they offered up the Karban Pesach. It's a communal obligatory offering. What's the Shaila? Ella, here we go. Kamash Malon. Duchovos kein pesach hu dekarev, ha lav kein pesach lo karev. So we'll say, what the Gemara is pointing out is as follows. If you look through Navi, so does the Navi record every single year that Klal Yisrael went ahead and offered up the Karban Pesach? And the answer is no. Why? Because we assume, of course, Klal Yisrael offered up the Karban Pesach. As we'll say, we don't have to go through the yearly routine. Right, it doesn't have to be explicitly articulated in the text. So obviously, I know they did the Karban Pesach. So why does the Navi feel compelled to tell me that when Klal Yisrael came into Eretz Yisrael, they performed the Pesach in Gilgal? Why do you have to tell me that? To which the Gemara answers, or Rabbi Shimon answers, because again, the Torah's teaching, the Navi's teaching me an important lesson, which is that when in Gilgal, when the Mishkan was in Gilgal, which was for 14 years, they only offered up communal offerings like the Karban Pesach. What does it mean, like the Karban Pesach? Karbanos Tzibor, which have a set time. Those were the offerings offered up in Gilgal. Kein Pesach hu dekarev, halav kein Pesach lo karev. Karbanos like the Karban Pesach were offered up in Gilgal, i.e., obligatory offerings with a set time were offered up, but other offerings, even though they were communal obligatory offerings, were not offered up. I the Edah. So we'll say, so what are the other, so fine, that's the sheet of Rabbi Shimon. What are the other opinions do with this? So we'll say, this is actually amazing. They needed to teach me the halach of Rabbi Yochanan. What does Rabbi Yochanan say? Then Rabbi Yochanan, Mishra Mibino, Arel Mekabal Hazar. We'll say, this is a fascinating halacha. Now, literally, Arel Mekabal Hazar means that if an Arel, who is an uncircumcised individual, becomes Tamei Tumas Mace, you could sprinkle upon him the waters of the Para Aduma, and he becomes Tar from Tumas Mace, even though he is still an Arel. Now we'll say, so again, the Hava Mina is maybe Hazah only works on a person who's circumcised. It doesn't work on a person who's uncircumcised. Kamash Milano, we learn from here that Hazah, the Para Aduma, works even on a person who is uncircumcised. We'll say, where do we learn that from? This is actually amazing. Look at Rashi, Arel, Shenitma B'mace. It's about six lines from before Rashi gets wide, eight lines. Arel, Shenitma B'mace, Mekabal Hazah. So we'll say, if an Arel becomes Tamei Tumas Mace, he could become purified ultimately again through the sprinkling of the paraduma. Tarmu tumas meis liga b'kadshim, to touch other sacrificial items. V'yolaf mehacha d'chsev. Here we go. Vayasu es haPesach b'Gilgal. Supposed to say, so Navi tells you that Klal Yisrael did the Karban Pesach when they were in Gilgal. So b'dimashma shasul kilcha. So b'mila b'tar. Now we'll say the halacha is you cannot go ahead and do the Karban Pesach if you're an Arel. An uncircumcised person is not permitted to take part in the Karban Pesach. So the Gemara says, Veruban, so which means they came into Eretz Yisrael, did Karban Pesach, which means they had Mila. Now we know Veruban, Arel, and Hayu B'Midbar. Now we know the majority of Jews were uncircumcised in the desert. How do we know this? Tichsiv lo malu. Because we'll say the Pasuk tells us that when Yeshua comes into Eretz Yisrael, the first thing they do is mass Mila. There was no Mila in the Midbar. So we'll say the reason they didn't do that is because in the Midbar, there was always the potential for travel. Traveling post-circumcision ultimately is dangerous. So they did not do Mila in the desert. So they come into Eretz Yisrael, the first thing they do is mass Mila. Now listen to this. When do we come into Eretz Yisrael? On the 10th of Nisan. So we're coming in 10th of Nisan. The majority of Klal Yisrael is uncircumcised. So what happened? Mishum chulsha dorcha, because again the weakness of the road, which means we don't do bris mila when traveling. Ella bechad srehu demol. So also listen to this. Therefore, they must have, if they came in on the 10th, let's assume for a moment they did a mila immediately. They did mila on the 11th. Va'ashkach detmei misim shayu shahayu bahem. Now we'll say, now the assumption is the overwhelming majority of Klal Yisrael were tamei tumas mis. Why are they tamei tumas meis? Shari ruban tamei meisim hayu shemeisim avosem kol arba'im shana b'midbar v'nitmu ubahem. Avos is amazing because remember most of those people who came in had immediate relatives who died in the desert over the course of the 40 years. And therefore, again, the assumption is the children buried the parents. As such, the children were tamei meisim. So it's just an amazing history lesson here. So the Jews who came into Eretz Yisrael were tamei tumas meis and were also uncircumcised. What's the issue? So fine, mila could be accomplished with sum on the 11th. Now remember, Karban Pesach has to be offered when? Karban Pesach has to be offered on the 15th. On the 14th, in the afternoon, I'm sorry. Therefore, kibla azah, v'nitiru ba'ar lasan. Ein lem shos lahazos mishemalu, da'atzarach lahafrish shlosh yomem bin hazah lahazah, revich v'rvi'i chamishi v'shishi, v'kan ilo havu yom echad asar bin isan hazah rishona, la'achar shemalu, su lo matiz man hazah. So also listen to this. You need a minimum of 3 days in between sprinklings for the para aduma. So for the paraduma. So therefore, again, what the Gemara suggests is as follows: if you have to be circumcised for the sprinkling of the paraduma, then there is no way that they could have offered up the Karban Pesach ultimately again on that first year. In order for them to offer it up on that first year, it had to be that the first sprinkling was done when. When they were still uncircumcised. So therefore, again, Abosai, even though Rabbi Shimon is going ahead and learning out, Rabbi Shimon is learning out that Halacha Lamaisa in Gilgal, they only did time-bound obligatory karbanos based on the fact that the Navi tells me that they did the Karban Pesach in Gilgal. Therefore, again, so the other opinion of Abosai says that no, Rabbi Yochanan says that from this pasuk we learn something else, which is that an Arel Mekabal Hazah, that you could even do the sprinkling of the Para Aduma on an Arel, and his Arel status does not prevent the waters of the Para Aduma from affecting a Kapara, not a Kapara, but to affecting Tara, purity within him. And also just, I was very struck by this, only because this particular halacha also contains a dramatic amount of history, right? Their ancestors were uncircumcised for 40 years. For 40 years, children born in the desert did not have bris milah. They were all tamei meis, ultimately because they were burying their parents in the desert over the course of that time. But yet the halacha is that even in Arel is makabal hazah. Tani tana kamei drav acha bar abba. So we'll say ultimately again, so the Tana taught this before of acha bar abba. Ein bein bami gidolo le bami kitano. So we'll say there is, so again, remember now, we're teaching this, Tana teaches before of acha bar abba. There is a difference between a bami gidolo and a bami kitano. Ella Pesach v'chovos hakavu lenzman. So we'll say this reflects the view of Rabbi Shimon. That ultimately, what? There is no difference between Abama Kitana, Abama Gidola, except Pesach and Chovos hakavu lenzman, which means that on Abama Gidola, the only thing you are offering up are not only obligatory karbanos, but time-bound obligatory karbanos. So we'll say this is the shita of Rabbi Shimon. Amar lei, t'targi mas nisach ba'olas chova. So we'll say, said to him, so explain your brayse as referring to ultimately again, an olas chova, diika olas nedava. Because I will say, in other words, when looking ultimately again for which types of karbanos, it would be interesting to see situations where there is a parallelism, where same type of carbon, same min of carbon, could be offered up on a bama gidola and a bama kitana. So for example, I will say an olas chova could be technically offered up on a bama gidola, and the same type of ola could be offered up as an adava on a bama kitana. So I will say, so the Masoras Hashas now changes the next phrase. It reads, di chatos, chatos nedava mi'ika. Because we'll say, if it was in terms of a chatos, there's no such thing as a chatos nedava, and because of that, it can never be offered up, ultimately, again, on the bama kitana. So, di chatos, chatos nedava mi'ika, v'lukma b'minchas chova. So why don't you go ahead, and we'll say, and set it up as dealing with a case of an obligatory mincha, d'ha ika chavitin. Because I will say there is the case of the Karban Chavitin, which is the Mincha of the Kohen Gadol, to which the Gemara says, Kasavar e Mincha Bebama. Because I will say this particular opinion is of the opinion which we saw before, that Menachos were not offered up on a Bama at all. Fine. So this concludes the Braisa's investigation of the various Shitos. So I'm just pointing out, it is fascinating to see that we have just a dramatic historical Machlokes about what was done during the period of Bamos. What was permitted, and again, I will say this really refers specifically to two periods of time, which is the period of Nov and Givon, which was for 14, for Gilgal, which was for 14 years, and for Nov and Givon, which we'll discuss, was for 57 years. These were the periods of time where the Mishkan was impermanent. Because obviously in the desert, even though, again, at the end of the day, the Mishkan was impermanent, it had the status of a permanent structure, and in Shiloh, for 369 years, it also has the status of a permanent structure. So really, again, this four-way machlokis that we discussed is what are you allowed to do in a time, essentially, when bamos are permitted. When I have a license for an individual altar, so what is permitted on the individual altar, which there seems to be a general level of consensus with, although there's some machlokis in the details, versus what is permitted ultimately, again, on the bama gidola. Good. So it says the Gemara, ba'al l'shiloh. So also remember, again, now we come to Shiloh. So now in Shiloh, what's happening? So remember, the Mishnah said, that when they came to Shiloh, Ne'esra Bamos, number one, Bamos become Mu'asir. Number two, V'lohaya Sham Tikra Ela Beis Havanim Bilvar. So we'll say the next thing is that in Shiloh, there were stone walls, but there was no permanent roof. So it says the Gemara, Menahani Mili. Where do we know ultimately again that there were stone walls but no permanent roof? Amr Chibar Ava Amr Rabbi Yochanan Kasev Echad Omer Vativieu Beis Hashem Shiloh. So we'll say one pasuk says that ultimately again they brought the Aron to the Beis Hashem Shiloh. This is actually talking about not the Aron, not Shmuel Hanavi, or little Shmuel. When Shmuel was a little boy, his mother, after he was 3 years old, brought him to the Beis Hashem in Shiloh. So we'll say one pasuk calls it a bayis. The cause of Echadomar Vayitosh es Mishkan Shiloh. And we'll say the second pasuk says Vayitosh Mishkan Shiloh. The Chalosh Baruch Hu abandoned the Mishkan in Shiloh. So he calls it a Mishkan. Mishkan, we'll say, is a tent. So which one is it? Is the Mishkan ultimately, again, is the Mishkan a bayis, or is the Mishkan is the Shiloh a Mishkan? Is Shiloh a home or is Shiloh a tent? So we'll say the nafkamina, of course, would be that a home presumably has a roof, right? A tent does not. Ohel, so the Gemara says, Vayitosh Mishkan Shiloh, she's quoting over here the Pasuk from Tehillim. Ohel Shikin Ba'adam Uksiv, Vayimas Ba'ohel Yosef Uveshevet Ephraim Lobach. So, okay, so we'll say, how do we reconcile these two ideas? Was Shiloh considered to be an ohel, or was Shiloh considered to be a bayis? Hakizad lo haisa sham tikra. So we'll say the reconciliation is very simple. It didn't have a roof. Ela avonim milamaton viirios milamalon vihaisa menucha. Rather, what did it have? It had stone walls on the bottom, and it had a cloth roof. So as such, again, this is the reconciliation. It is called ultimately an ohel because it did not have a permanent roof, but it is called a bayis because it had permanent stone walls. Good. And this vihi haisa menucha, and I will say Shiloh, is what we refer to ultimately again as menucha. Remember again, this is when Moshe Rabbeinu says in his pasuk, which tries to remind us that the things that we do in the desert, we will not be able to do ultimately when we come into Eretz Yisrael from a sacrificial purpose. Kilo basem el amenucha v'anachla. Moshe Rabbeinu refers to two places where ultimately, again, the Mishkan will enjoy the same status as it did in the desert. One is called menucha, one is called nachla. The Gemara comments that when the Mishkan was in Shiloh, that was the period of menucha. Nachala ultimately refers to the period of the Beis HaMikdash. Next, Kachi Kadosh. So also the next part of the Mishnah is that the Mishnah says, Kachi Kadoshim Ne'achal Lefnim Ha'akilayim. When the Mishkan was in Shiloh, Kachi Kadoshim were consumed inside of the curtains. The Kachim Kalim U'Maisr Sheni B'chol HaRoah. Now we'll say, now this is actually interesting. So Kachim Kalim and Maisr Sheni were eaten B'chol HaRoah, which meant, we'll say, that you didn't have to be inside of the Mishkan, but rather anywhere where you were, as long as you were able to see Shiloh, you were able to eat, able to see the Mishkan and Shiloh, you were able to go ahead and eat Kodshim Kalim and Ma'aser Sheni. So it says the Gemara, Menahani Mili, from where do we know this? Amar Rav Oshia, Amar Kras. So we'll say, The idea that Kodesh HaKadoshim can only be eaten within the Kilayim, that I don't need a pasuk teacher. I'll say that's Temple Law 101, right? Kodesh HaKadoshim could only be eaten ultimately inside the curtains of Shiloh. But what about Kodesh HaKalam Ma'aser Sheni can be eaten B'chol HaRoeh, anywhere where you can see Shiloh? Where do we know that from? So it says, Gemara Moshe D'Amar Kra, Hishamar Lecha, Pentale Olosecha B'chol Mokom Asher Ata Tira. So we'll say, so the pasuk says, be careful, lest you go ahead and offer up your karbanos in any place which you are able to see. Now, what is it in the Gemara Darshans? B'chol makom asher tira iatamala. Torah is telling me, Bosai, that just because I could see the makom hamishkan, I am not allowed to offer up karbanos there. Aval ata ochel b'chol makom sha'ata roeh. But you can eat it wherever you're able to see it. So the fact that the Torah explicitly says you can't offer up karbanos, even if you could see the Makom HaMishkan, tells me I can't offer up karbanos just based on being able to see the Makom HaMishkan, but I can eat karbanos as long as I can see the Makom HaMishkan. I ema b'chol makom shatara iata ma'ala aval ata zavech b'chol makom shatira. Maybe not. Maybe what Torah is coming to teach you, I will say, is what? It's true. You can't offer up karbanos in a place where you could see the Mishkan from, but maybe you can slaughter karbanos. In other words, I can't sacrifice. I can't go ahead and put on the Mizbeach just because I can see the Makom Mishkan. Offering Ha'alah has to be done on the Makom Mishkan. Maybe slaughtering could be done anywhere where there is a ocular connection between myself and the Mishkan. To which the words of Rabbi Yannai Amakra, Sham Ta'ala B'Sham Ta'aseh. But I say the Pasuk, so therefore Rabbi Yannai says, the Pasuk links Ta'ala Aliyah and Asiyah. Aliyah Rabosei refers to the actual offering up of the carbon. Asiyah refers to the shechting of the carbon. So pretty much, wherever you could offer it is where you could shecht it. Wherever you can't offer it, you can't shecht it. Therefore, if I can't offer it just because I could see the Makom HaMishkan, I can't shecht it there either. Yet, Torah is clearly coming to tell me, I can't do something, but by inference, I can do something else. What's the something else I can do? Achila. So therefore, I will say the halacha is, therefore the Gemara learns out from here, that the halacha is that although I can't offer up and I can't shech the carbon outside of the confines of the Mishkan, I am permitted to eat it, where I am permitted to eat the carbon, ultimately, again, wherever I could see the Makom HaMishkan. Rav Avdimi Bar Chasa Amar, Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, we'll say Amad Beis, Velo Tanas Shiloh. We'll say, we're going to get to some really beautiful Gemara. Velo Tanas Shiloh. So we'll say, actually, Rashi points out over here, there's no such pasuk that the Gemara just quoted. There's no such pasuk that says velo sa'anas shiloh. Rashi says, I want to tell you, I looked it up, velo matzasev. I didn't find the pasuk b'mikra. Ava matzasev mizracha ta'anas shiloh. What he did find, Rabosai, is the phrase in Yoshua, mizracha ta'anas shiloh. Rabosai, actually, the important part that we're focusing on is this phrase of sa'anas shiloh. So listen to this. Makom shekala roa oso misaneach alav al achilas kodshem shelo. So I say ultimately again it means literally a place shekala roa where anyone sees it misaneach alav. Rashi says tanas lashon tania va'aniya shayim misanchin v'rasha misham hayuzochin achilas kodshem shesamakam arisa. So we'll say listen to this. So why is Shiloh called Sa'anas Shiloh? It's a place where people sigh. Why? Because when they come and they see the place and they remember what was there, they sigh, remembering the fact that they were able to eat karbanos just by looking at the place. So I'm just bringing another drasha to support this idea, where ultimately, again, when it came to Shiloh, as long as you were in sight of Shiloh, you were permitted to eat your kachim kalim and your ma'aser sheni. Rabbi Avohu Amar Amakra, Ben Porat Yosef, Ben Porat Alei Ayin. So we'll say, so remember again, this is in the brachos of Yaakov Avinu to Yosef, right? Calls him Ben Porat Yosef, literally again, the son, the fruitful son Yosef, Ben Porat Alei Ayin. The fruitful son Alei Ayin, Rabbi Yosef, means he rises above the eye. What does that mean? Ayin shalorata salazon, olehanos mehanos medavar shenu shalo, the eye which would not benefit from something that was not his. We'll say a reference to Eshes Potiphar, that although Yosef had the ability to sin with the wife of Potiphar, he did not do so. Tiske v'tochal kimale ineho. Ultimately, again, has the ability to benefit and to eat as far as the eye can see. And we'll say, now what is this a reference to? So remember again, the Mishkan Shiloh was in the tribal portion of Ephraim, which is one of the sons of Yosef. So essentially, the Mishkan of Shiloh was in the tribal portion of Yosef. Obviously, there's no tribal portion of Yosef. Yosef becomes Menashe and Ephraim. It is in the tribal portion of Ephraim. So the Gemara dashes over here so beautifully that in the schus that Yosef would not set his eyes upon something that was not his, i.e. Oshes Potiphar, he's rewarded by having the Mishkan in his tribal portion. And I will say, what's the halacha with the Mishkan? That essentially you could eat as far as the eye can see. In other words, as long as you could see the Mishkan, you were permitted to go ahead and consume your Kachim Kalim and your Ma'aseh Sheni. A very beautiful Gemara. In the schus of not looking upon that which was not his, ultimately, again, he is rewarded with a Mishkan, which ultimately allows one to consume Kachim Kalim and Ma'aseh Sheni for as far as the eye can see. Quite beautiful. So Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina Omer, Uritzon Shochnei Sneh. So when the Pasuk says, Uritzon Shochnei Sneh, so we'll say, literally it means Uritzon, the will, Shochnei Sneh, those who dwell in the thorn bush. So we'll say, what does this mean? Ayn Shalom Ratzasa, the eye, Yosef, who would not benefit from something that was not his, tiske v'tochal bin hasnuin. Also will have the privilege to eat between those who hate him. So ultimately, it was actually quite a sad pasuk. The Gemara's understanding over here, Uritzon Shochnei Sneh is a reference to the fact that Yosef's tribal portions, are amongst those who historically hated him. His brothers hated him. Rashi says, Bein Asnuim, Shiloh, Kadashav Nechal, and Af Bigvule Shar Shratim Shasana. So let's say, so remember again, what we just established is that Halacha Lamaisa, you can eat Kachim Kalim Maiser Sheni from anywhere where you can see Shiloh. And we'll talk about this, you were able to see Shiloh even from the tribal portions of the other brothers. So amazingly enough, Yosef, right, you're able to eat Karbanos, even when you're dwelling in the portions of those who historically hated him. It's terribly sad, Pasuk. Tana Roash Amru, so when we say that if you see Shiloh, that you can go and eat Kachim Kalim and Ma'aser Sheni, Kulov Aloha Mafsik Bein Ola Beino. But it has to be an unobstructed view of Shiloh. Right? It can't be that it's an obstruction. You could only eat if you have an unobstructed view of Shiloh. Amar Ali Rabbi Shimon Ben Eliyakim Rabbi Lazar, Asar B'lecha, I'll give you an example of this. Kigon Knishta, Be Knishta De Ma'on. The example would be if you go into the Shul of Ma'on. If you go into the Shul of Ma'on, that gives you an unobstructed view of Shiloh. So Amar Rav Papa, Rosh Amru, Lo Roa Kulo, El Ra Mikzasa. Rabbi Lazar, interestingly enough, Rav Papa comes along and says, but you don't have to have a full view. Even if you just see some of the Mishkan, an unobstructed view of some of the Mishkan, that is enough. So, by Rav Papa asks the Shaila, Omid Veroa Yoshev in Aroa Mai. So, what happens if when I'm standing up, I can see the Mishkan, but I'm sitting down, I can't? By Rav Yom Yah, Omid Agabi Anacha Veroa Yoshev Besoch Anacha Vein Aroa Mai. We'll say, what happens if I'm standing up on the edge of the river, I can see it. But if I'm not on the edge of the river, but if I'm sitting down in the river, I can't see it. So say, what's the halacha in these cases? Teku. Okay. Kiyas Rav Dini Amar Rabbi. B'shloshem ha'kamosh sharsa shechina al Yisrael. So what comes on Rav Dini? Says the name of Rabbi, that in three different places, the Shechina rested upon Klal Yisrael. What are the three places? Nov v'givon. So Nov and Givon, as you've already seen, are always grouped together. We'll discuss why they're always grouped together. Nov and Givon, Ubeis Salom, and the Beis HaMikdash. So say these are the three places where the Shekhinah rested upon Klal Yisrael. I'm sorry? So the Gemara doesn't count Gilgal. We'll discuss why that is. So Nov, Shiloh, Nov and Givon, and Beis Salomim. Ubekulon, and in all of these places, Lo Sharsa Ela Bechilik Binyamin. Abba said, now here's the interesting place. Here's the interesting idea. All three of these places are in the Chilik of Binyamin, although we're going to qualify that statement in just a moment. So amazingly enough, the Shevet of Binyamin has the great Tzchus that the Ribon Shom always rests his presence in their Chilik. Shana Emar, as the Pasuk says, Chofeif Alav Kol Hayom. So we'll say literally again, Chofeif Alav means how he hovers above him the whole day. Kol Chafifos, we'll say now again, remember, this is in the bracha This is in Vizos HaBracha. Right? So this is in Moshe Rabbeinu's Brachos to Shevet Binyamin. Chofef alav kalayom kol chafifos lo yihu ela bechelko shal Binyamin. Ultimately, again, whenever God hovers in this world, all divine hoverings will be over Binyamin. Ki azal abayi amra kamed Rav Yosef amar chad birahava havalei lechla velo miskan. So we'll say, listen to this. I should say, chad bira have lekailil velo miskan. So we'll say, so this is actually very interesting. So Abaye said over this ruling, remember again, this was said by Rav Dimi. So Rav Dimi said the name of Rebbe, that again, Shechina rested in three places, and in all three places was in the Shevet of Binyamin. Abaye said this over in front of Rav Yosef, and Rav Yosef didn't like it. Rav Yosef said, you see, Kailil, we'll say Kailil was Abaye's father. Kailil had only one son, Velo Miskan. And you know what? His son just didn't get it right. In other words, Lo Bavashtach. Right? So, Kailil only had one son, Abaye, and Abaye just can't get it right. In other words, your teaching is wrong. V'oksiv, Vayitosh es Mishkan Shilo, Uksiv, Vayimas Bo'ol Yosef, Ubishevet Ephraim. So I'll say, ultimately, again, the Pasuk says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu abandoned the Mishkan and Shiloh. And it says he was disgusted, ultimately, again, by the Oel and Yosef and by Shevet Ephraim, which I'll say tells you what? That the Mishkan, at least in Shiloh, was not in the tribal portion of Binyamin, but rather, where was it? Where was it? In Ephraim. So how can you say that, we have a Mefurish Pasuk that says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu left the Oel Yosef, which was in Shevet Ephraim. So how can you tell me that the Mishkan ultimately, again, was always in the tribal portion of Binyamin? Here the Pasuk explicitly says it was in the tribal portion of Ephraim. So the Gemara says, at the end of the Pasuk, it says, B'Shevet Ephraim Lebachar, Amar of Adam, my Kashile. Dilma, maybe what it means is as follows. Dilma, Shechina Bechelik Binyamin, the Sanhedrin Gedola Bechelik Yosef. Let's say, maybe what it means is as follows. That the Mishkan actually straddled two areas. The area where the Shechina itself rested, that was in the Chelik of Binyamin. It was, we know historically, the Sanhedrin HaGadol always resided in the area of the Mishkan. So maybe what it means is as follows. The Shechina resided in the Chelik of Binyamin. The high court, the Sanhedrin HaGadol, that sat in the Shevet of Yosef. Or is the building was, obviously it's one structure, and it just, or it just protruded, right? It straddled, right? One part, the Shechina was in the Shevet of Binyamin. The Sanhedrin HaGadol ultimately, again, was in the Chelek of Yosef. Now, we'll say, where do we get this model from? Now, working backwards, Midimatzino v'esalorim the Shechina b'shechel koshal Binyamin, v'sanhedrin b'chelek Yehuda. So we'll say, because we know this, in the Beis HaMikdash, we know that the Beis HaMikdash itself straddled two tribal areas. The area of the Shechina rested, or the Shechina rested in the area of Shevet of Binyamin, but yet the Sanhedrin sat in the tribal area of Yehuda. So Amalei, so I'll say, here's the problem. That's a nice solution for the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Amalei hachi hashta hasa mikarva nachalos gabi hadadi. So we'll say that works fine because the tribal areas of Yehuda and Binyamin are right next to each other. So you can have a Beis HaMikdash that straddles two tribal areas. Hacha mi mekarvan. So we'll say over here, you're going to say that the tribal areas of Ephraim and Binyamin are next to each other. So you're going to say, yes, hacha nai mekarvan. Yes, in fact, again, they do straddle each other. Why? Kidam rabbi chayim bar bichanina, ritzua haisa yotzeis michelko shal Yehuda, v'nichneses lechelko shal Binyamin. So we'll say, ultimately, again, there was a ritzua, a little strip of land, which extended from the tribal area of Yehuda and went into the tribal area of Binyamin. Uba haya mizbeach banui. And I will say, it was actually on that Binyamin strip. It was on that Yehuda strip that entered into the tribal area of Binyamin, that Binyamin was very upset about. V'haya Binyamin HaTzadik mitztar ala labala. We'll say, the Shevet of Binyamin, or the Gemara phrase as Binyamin HaTzadik, was always very upset that there was a little strip of Shevet Yehuda land which extended into the tribal area of Binyamin, and it was upon that strip that the Bizbeach, that the altar was built. And Binyamin was always upset, trying to figure out ways to what? How do we, Jews are always buying real estate, right? So how do we go ahead and purchase that real estate? You know, again, it disrupts our, what's the word? Continuity, right? Our tribal continuity, our real estate continuity. Hachinami, so too by the Mishkan Rabosei, Ritzua haise yotzeis michelko shal Yosef, lechelko shal Binyamin. Rabosei, there was a little strip of land that ultimately went from the chelek of Yosef, which was really in this context in the tribe of Ephraim, into the tribal area of Binyamin. V'ahinu dechsev ta'anas Shiloh. And I will say this ultimately again, this was the sighing of Shiloh. I will say, what was the sighing of Shiloh? That Binyamin was very upset. Right, Binyamin was very upset because they wanted somehow to recapture this little strip of land. So there was a strip of land from Ephraim that ultimately extended into Binyamin that also housed part of the Mishkan. And therefore, again, Binyamin was always upset. Binyamin was always sighing because they wanted to get back to the little strip of land. Or as we'll say, Binyamin wants to have the totality of the Mishkan reside on its tribal land. It doesn't want to share the real estate of the Mishkan with anyone else. So Ketanai, so now what we see over here is that there seems to be a fundamental machlokes as to where exactly the Mishkan was situated. Now we know the Mishkan is situated in Shiloh. The question is, was this all the tribal area of Binyamin, specifically Ephraim, or was this shared ultimately again with Binyamin? So we see again, we have conflicting psukim that seem to tell us that on one hand, Chofef Alav Kalayom, which seems to tell me that wherever the Shekhinah resided, it was always in Binyamin, which seems to tell me that at least some part of the Mishkan was on the tribal area of Binyamin. Yet, what Rabbah say, we see again clearly that in Pasuk, in the Pasuk in Tilim and other places, indicates that the Mishkan was in the tribal portion of Shiloh. Shiloh resided in the tribal portion of Ephraim. So was it in Ephraim? Was it on Binyamin? It's a machlokes. Ketanoi. So here we go. Ketanoi. Chofef alav. When the Pasuk says that the Shekhinah hovers above it, right? It was a reference to Shevet Binyamin. So Chofef alav. Zem Mikdash Rishon. This refers to Mikdash Rishon. Kol Ayom. Zem Mikdash Sheni. Ubein Kesefav. And between its shoulders, Shachin it rests. Elu Yimos HaMashiach. This refers to the Messianic era. Rabbi Yom Rabbi says, Ubein Kesefav Shalem, when it says that the Shekhinah rests between its shoulders, this is a reference to the Messianic era. Rabbi Omer Chofef Alav Ze Olam Azeh Kalayom Eilu Yimos HaMashiach Ubein Kesefav Shachin Ze HaOlam Haba. Ultimately, again, what is this a reference to? This is a reference to Olam Haba. So we'll say, the fact that one of the opinions ultimately, again, refers that Chofef Alav is Olam Azeh indicates to us that what? That any place goes in accordance with the opinion that any place where the Shekhinah rested was always in the tribal portion of Binyamin. Rashi says, Ha'olam Hazeh, Kol Makom Shashar Sashchina, Vafshilo, Vinov, Vigivo. So we'll say, therefore, again, Machlokes Tanoim, do we say that everywhere the Shekhinah resided in this world was always in the tribal portion of Binyamin or not? Fundamental Machlokes. So we'll say, so here's what we know. We know that, of course, the Mishkan resided in Shiloh. That, of course, we know. The Shaila is, did some part of Shiloh. And we know that Shiloh was historically in the tribal portion of Ephraim. The question is, was there some part of the Mishkan which somehow straddled the tribal portion of Binyamin as well? Machlokes Tanoim. Good. Tan Rabbanan. I will say first of the intermediate wide lines. Tan Rabbanan. Here we go. Tan Rabbanan. Yimei O Amoed Shemidbar Arbaim Shana Chaser Achos. I will say, the Mishkan stood for 39 years. Abraham Shana Chasar Achas. For 39 years in the desert. Gilgal. I will say, the Mishkan in Gilgal stood for 14 years. Where do you get 14 years from? Zayin Shekavshu v'Zayin Shechilku. 7 years where they conquered Eretz Yisrael, 7 years where they divided Eretz Yisrael. Yimei O Amoed Shebeno V'Gibon. The Oamoy, the Mishkan stood in Oven Givon for Chamisha Mesheva, 57 years. Nishtairu Lishilo, Gimel Meos Shivim Chasar Achas. Therefore, I will say in Shiloh, the Mishkan stood the first of the widest lines for 370 years minus one, 369 years. So I will say here is the entire timeline of the Mishkan. So let's analyze this. Yimei Oamoy Shemid Barabim Chasar Achas Minola, and I will say, how do you know that the Mishkan stood for 39 years in the desert? See, we'll say, we say 40, it's really 39 years in the desert. How do we know this? From Damar Mar. Shana Rishona Asa Moshe Asa Mishkan. So we'll say, Moshe made the Mishkan in the first year of our sojourn in the desert. Shnia Hokam HaMishkan. In the second year ultimately, again, Moshe Rabbeinu set up the Mishkan. Remember, again, the Mishkan Rabbosai is made in the aftermath of the Chet HaEgel. In that same year, Moshe Rabbeinu sends the spies. Moshe Rabbeinu Shalom, and again, Rabbosai, remember. And then you have the Gzeira, ultimately, again, of the Miraculum for 40 years. Now, we go in the 40th year. Therefore, it turns out that the Mishkan stood for 39 years in the desert. Next, Shebegilgal Abbas Eshana. So we'll say in the Gilgal, the Mishkan stood for 14 years. Sheva shekiv, shuva sheva shechilku. Minola. So we'll say, where do we get 14? 7 years that they conquered the land, 7 years they divided the land. We'll say, where do you know? So from the Amar Kalev, because Kalev said, Ben arba'im shana anuchi, b'shloach Moshe eved Hashem osi mikadish barnea, l'ragel es ha'ares. So listen to this. Va'ashev oso davar, kashem l'bavi. So we'll say, so Kalev telling over, in Sefer Yoshua, telling over the story, Kalev says, I was 40 years old when Moshe Rabbeinu first sent me to go ahead and spy out the land. And I came back and I gave a proper report as was in my heart. Now the Pasuk says, Va'ata, hine anochi hayom ben chamesh ushmonim shana. Now, I am 85 years old. I'm 85 years old. Ki avrei liyardein, when Kalev crossed over the Yardein, Bar Kamahavi, how old was he? Shivim Vitamni. He was 78 years old. Vika'amar ben Chamesh Ushmonim Shana Harishev Shkivso. So we'll say, what's the 7 years between he crossing over and when he's speaking to Klal Yisrael? Those are the 7 years in which they conquered the land. He was 78 years old ultimately when they came into Eretz Yisrael. He's 85 when he's giving this speech. And therefore, you know, we'll say, where are those 7 years? Those are the 7 years of conquering the land. I v'sheva shechelku minai. So that tells you the 7 years of conquering the land. What about the 7 years of dividing up the land? Rabbi say, where do I know those from? Ibay sima midesheva shekivshu shevena mishechelku. So I'll say, so the first answer is interesting. It was a svara. If it took them 7 years to conquer, it took them 7 years to divide. Which Rabbi say, by the way, is such a dramatic statement, right? It takes 7 years to do war, and it takes 7 years to decide who's going to get which piece of land, right? An incredible, incredible mussar. So it took 7 years to drive out every single kingdom in Eretz Yisrael. Took them another 7 years to go and divide the land. V'ibay seimo, midlo mishkachas la ba'arba'as reshana, achar asher hoksa'ir. But the other possibility is because, remember, the Pasuk itself says, the Pasuk in Yechezkel, Rabbosai, talks about after 14 years after they had originally conquered the city. So the Navi Yechezkel tells us that they were only settled after 14 years. Now we know that 7 of those years were conquering. How do we account ultimately again for the remaining 7 years? It must be what? That those were the 7 years ultimately that they divided up the land. So we now know. So now we have 39 years in the desert, 14 years in Gilgal, the 14 years made up of 7 years of Kibush, 7 years of Chiluk. So we'll say, actually, we'll stop over here for today. We'll let Mirat Hashem pick up at the two dots of the Ol Moed Sheb and Nov and Givon, the 57 years in Nov and Givon and Mirat Hashem tomorrow. Shkoyach.